Welcome to episode 13 of the 3AM Fear podcast.
Welcome to part 2 in the Brentwood Massacre series. I know we had covered a lot in part 1. We spoke about the victims. We also spoke about the timeline leading up to their deaths. Now in part 2, we are going to see what actually happened after this tragedy. What happened to Matthew, and was justice actually served? Let's get started.
Hello and welcome to the 3AM Fear podcast. I'm Nikita Ferrau, mystery and thriller author. On this podcast, I talk about real crimes and real people. Due to the graphic nature of some of this content, listener discretion is advised. You can find the episode show notes on my website, 3amfear.com. Let's get started.
On April 15, 2014, is when all the families of the victims started receiving the news about what happened. When Lawrence's family was informed, they said they had a deep feeling in their stomach that something bad had happened. They had tried to contact him, but they didn't get any response. Lorenzo, his father, said that he was up almost all night looking at his phone, hoping a call could come. The next morning, a knock on the door gave them the answer they dreaded the most. The police officers came in civilian clothes and asked them to sit down and close the TV. They then showed some clothes and asked if they recognized them. They said yes, these are Lawrence's clothes. They knew something was wrong. They said that there had been an incident and their boy would never return again. When Katie's parents received the news, they said that at first they thought that the police had gotten the wrong girl, because they weren't even aware that Katie was a part of some party or that Katie had even gone to a party. Their morning routine started like any other. Greg's second wife and Katie's stepmother, Cam Lara Way, turned on the TV when she saw the news of 5 people getting killed. She had no clue what was in store for her. There was no mention of any names in the news, just that 5 people were killed at a house party. Cam, in a later interview, said that she was dropping off her young daughter, who was then in grade 3, across the street to the school bus, when she saw all these people outside her house. She didn't think much, because it was usual for parents to come and park outside her house, because when you cross the street, you get the school bus, so parents would come, they would park at her place, or the street in front of her house, they would cross the road, they would go to get the bus. But this time, a car pulled up. They weren't parents, but policemen in civilian clothing. They got up to her and asked if she was Shannon, Katie's biological mother. And she said no. She then went on to tell them that her husband's ex-wife's name was Shannon. Her young daughter was still with her at this point. She later said in an interview that she couldn't believe when the cops told her what had happened. She refused to believe. She said Katie was not the person to attend parties, but unfortunately, this was not the case here. Similar to Lawrence's parents, Katie's too were afraid and the cops had to tell them that no, they were not doing anything wrong. None of the kids were doing anything wrong. They were unfortunately at the wrong place at the wrong time. They requested her to call her husband but not tell him why. When he found out the truth, he was devastated and could not believe. The cops then requested him to call his wife Shannon and ask her to come. But the same thing, they told him, please don't tell Shannon why you're calling her, just ask her to come. Jordan's mother, Patty, also heard the news but could not bring herself to imagine something like that would happen to her child. Jordan was a good student who was focused on his studies. He only hung out with good crowds, so it was really unbelievable that this horrendous crime would happen. She said he didn't have any violent friends. She wanted to know the name of this person who did this, and the cop said that it was there all over the news. The cops thought that it was in her best interest if they didn't share much, because the details of whatever happened that night were quite graphic and they didn't want to scar her. But she still wanted to know. A press conference that was held about the situation a little while later told everything, and that's where on television she heard everything that happened to her child. Zach's mother, Rhonda Lee, wasn't worried. She knew he was planning to stay over. It wasn't until she received a call from one of his bandmates who was at the party that she came to know what had happened to him. Rhonda called the police and asked if this was correct and if they had the right guy. They said they would call back soon, and several hours later, they did. They confirmed that the person they had was indeed the killer. They also said that Matthew was currently being treated at the hospital and was awaiting trial. Josh Hunter's father was out of town on business right after an electric night celebration of the EP release. He said he remembered watching the news and saw what had happened, but at that time he didn't know that his boy was one of the victims. When Barkley Hunter got a call from Kelly telling him that she couldn't get hold of her son, he immediately got into a cab and headed for the airport. Later, Kelly confirmed that one of the victims was Josh. The cops worked fast. They had to make sure that whatever information they were getting was right, whatever the information they were giving to the families was right. They wanted to make sure 100% that the person they had caught was right. I mean, even though there was a lot of evidence against him, even though people had seen him, there were eyewitnesses, everything was there, they still had to be extra careful. They had to be sure, they had to know everything before they made any of this news public. Because as you know, this is the age of social media, it's 2014. Most of the cases that I've covered before, you have all these media flushing out news left and right. And they had to make sure that now this is the age of social media. So it's not just media, it's social media. News works faster. News runs faster now with social media. They wanted to make sure that if they said anything, if there was any news that went out about Matthew or about the murders or about the victims, it had to be 100% right. They had to be on their toes. They had to look after the victims. They had to look after the victims' families. They had to get the news right. They had to make sure that Matthew also was the right person, because according to me, don't come for me, according to me, Matthew's father is a very high-ranking police officer. So it's important for them that they get everything right. Although much later, you will get to know that how good Matthew's father actually is. Because usually in this position, I've seen that a lot of people don't do what Matthew's father did. We'll get to that a little while later. But I just wanted to know that I have huge respect for Matthew's father in this case. The investigation was led by Matt Den Marino. 2 days after the mass murder, Matthew's parents had come out to the press, apologizing to the victims' families about their son's actions. His father also said that when convicting his son, there was not going to be any favoritism involved. They further added that they were too much in shock and confused to why he would do such a horrific and graphic crime. Now, the press conference is there online. I am not going to play it here. I don't know if I'm allowed to play it here on my channel, so I will link it in the description. You can just check out. It's there on YouTube, or if you want to see, I'll just link it in my description. You can see how sad, how broken his father is. When he starts talking, he is a little okay. He starts saying how sorry he is. And as he gets further into this topic, and as he starts saying that, you know, how bad he feels and how he never thought that his son would do something like this, you can actually see him shaking. You can see him crying, you can see him shaking. And this is something that shows that he is a true person. He is not lying, he is not going to cover up his son's crime. He is not going to do something like, you know, protect his son and try to get this thing, far away. He's not going to do anything like that. He's not going to try to protect his son or keep his son first. He brings the law before everyone. And that is something that I really liked. As a father, I feel bad for him. As a father, of course, I feel bad for him because he has lost so much. But also as a police officer, he's doing his duty. I have full respect to him. On Friday, April 18, 2014, 3 days after their children were killed, the families of the 5 victims were brought together as a group for the very first time. Calgary police arranged for a special meeting. It was the first of many. The meetings brought out a lot of pain and families seemed to comfort each other as they had each lost someone very close to them. Calgary University had memorials for the victims and some of Matthew's friends even attended these memorials. They were just as shocked as everyone. There was a lot going for Matthew. He had good grades, he had just gotten accepted into law school, he was on the track team in college. His life was just too perfect for him to do something like this. He was in fact very happy. He seemed very happy until he started with all his Facebook posts and he started talking about death and Satan and Medusas and vampires and carrying around garlic. He was a different person. He was an A-grade student. He was an amazing person and an amazing friend. No one knew suddenly what happened. It's just something just snapped. And one fine day, Matthew was a completely different person. On April 30, the day that Lawrence would have celebrated his 28th birthday, the Calgary community got together and paid to make a special charter bus that traveled from the university to the service station. They called it the Lawrence Hong Express. This was because of Lawrence's passion to become a transit planner. Since Lawrence and Zach were in their final years of school, they were both given their degrees that their families could put up in their homes. Memorial scholarships were made for Josh and Jordan. Another memorial scholarship was made at Counterpoint Dance Studio in remembrance for Katie because that was the studio that she actually learned dance and studied. This scholarship was a way to help kids who loved dance but were financially struggling. On May 22, 2014, Matthew had been under a 30-day psychiatric evaluation when he was declared fit to stand trial. But before he even got to the trial, he was sent back to the hospital. On May 16, 2016, Matthew's official trial began. Now this is 2 whole years after the incident. 2 years. Matthew attempted at pleading not guilty due to reasons of insanity, and his lawyers and defense team did it to back it up with the claim that doctors also agreed on this. They even produced 2 years worth of proof from doctors showing that Matthew was not fit, that Matthew had some problem because of which he did this, and Matthew was not in his right mind when he did all this. When he killed these 5 people, he was not in his right mind. They further proved that during the time of the crime, he was going through a psychotic break as well as suffering from schizophrenia, so he didn't know how to differ from reality and fantasy at the moment. Which meant that when he was killing all those people, he actually didn't know what he was doing. His lawyers then said that it would be better for Matthew if he were in the hospital getting the care he needed instead of being in jail. They also added that now that he was under medication, he was much better. And Matthew also wanted that. Matthew didn't want to go to jail. Who would want to go to jail? He would rather be in the hospital being taken care of than being in jail with criminals, with other criminals. Why would he want to go to jail? Of course, he doesn't want to go to jail. The other side of the court argued these claims, bringing up the text message that he had sent to his co-worker saying, quote, "Trust that I never hurt anyone. All will be known 5. End quote. So this text was sent right before the killing, and this text also, like many of his other texts, almost all of his other texts, did not make much sense except for that one word, 5. Why did he send this exact sentence with the word 5 in it, and 5 people were killed? And this happened, this text was sent before he went to the party. So why 5? Did he know that he was going to the party to kill 5 people? Was he thinking of killing 5 people, random 5 people, or those exact 5 people? Or were there voices in his head telling him beforehand that he had to kill 5 people? Or was he actually fine and he wanted to kill 5 people? Unfortunately, this would never be answered. To a lot of people, it seemed like a premeditated crime. Or why would he say that, as I said, many people thought that this was a premeditated crime. He knew beforehand. Otherwise, why would he send this kind of messages saying 5? Now, this is something that came up during the court, and even I did when I initially started reading this case, when I started researching this case, this question came into my mind, which was, why was he running away from the crime scene if he didn't know that he was doing something wrong? If he was in a psychotic episode, then he believed that everything that he did was right. So why was he running away? Why didn't he try to stab his best friend? Why did he just give his knife to his best friend? Why didn't he stab his best friend? When the police caught on to him, why didn't he try to attack them? Of course, he resisted the arrest, but why didn't he attack? Canine dogs were brought in. He attacked a canine dog. But why didn't he try to do something to the police? I mean, of course, I understand that he didn't have a knife, but I don't think that he acted in a way that a person would act who was in a psychotic episode. I don't know exactly how he was acting, but the way that I read online, it didn't seem like that. It seemed, at one point, you see him in a psychotic episode. He's out there, he's killing one by one, whoever comes in his way, he's just killing left or right. He's just killing people. And the next moment you see him, he's outside and he's not killing people. He's trying to run away. So why was he running away if he was in that psychotic episode? If he knew what he was doing was wrong, that means he was not in a psychotic episode. So was this all pre-planned? So this kind of reminded me of a Hindi movie. Don't come for me. It's just something that I've seen. I love to watch movies, I love to read books, and there are a lot of things that come up, a lot of stories that come up. And also, I'm a crime thriller writer, so I get a lot of ideas from all these things that happen. And there was this movie, a Hindi movie that I've seen, where the killer convinces people, including the court, saying that he had an episode, and during that episode, he ended up killing a person. And while he was running away, he was caught by the police, drenched in blood. And he actually wins the case. And much later on, it is revealed that he was actually not in the psychotic episode, because he knew exactly whom to kill, when to kill, and how to kill. So this kind of, my mind started rolling around on this topic when I read about whatever Matthew did, the way that Matthew spoke, and the way that he acted. This kind of popped into my head, and I'm not telling this by reading anybody's theories or by reading any news or by listening to anything. It's just when I read the story and the timeline, it kind of didn't make sense, because if Matthew was killing these five people, why didn't he kill everyone else? So it didn't make sense. Don't come for me. Just something that I heard, just something that I read, just something that I thought. Don't come for me. We all know he's guilty. He's of course guilty, but he's telling the truth or lie. I don't know. He was sent to a mental asylum when he was caught. So as part of his deal, he would not go to prison. He would instead be in the mental asylum. Once a year, he has a re-evaluation. So every year with the re-evaluation, the doctors have three choices. They can either fully discharge him or discharge him with limited privileges or keep him in the hospital. Now, something I want to add here is that according to his parents and classmates, Matthew's behavior started to change in the weeks before the stabbing. So all of this was not spur of the moment act. He began posting more frequently on Facebook, submitting bizarre status updates. Remember, he even posted something before his killing spree. In 2017, Matthew was granted ground privileges, which meant he was allowed to go outside of the secured facility under supervision. So Matthew was finally declared NCR, that is, not criminally responsible. So the court declared that Matthew was not responsible for anything that happened. He was not in the right mindset. He did it when he was in a psychotic episode, and whatever he did then would not go in his record. So that means today, Matthew has a clean record. I kind of feel bad for those five families, because Matthew got a clean slate. I don't know, he had a psychotic episode, he may have been mentally unfit, but he killed five people and now he has a clean record. It just doesn't seem fair. The following year, in 2018, 2 years after being declared not criminally responsible, NCR, Matthew was moved to a secure facility in Edmonton, a 3-hour drive north of Calgary. Doctors said in their statements that he was a model patient, so much so that he was even given unsupervised ground privileges as well as passes into the city as long as he was supervised by a responsible adult. He could just walk into the city as long as he had a responsible adult with him, and this responsible adult would be one of his parents. He was also allowed to leave for 24 hours at a time to stay with his family. By 2019, the freedoms were increased again, this time exponentially. While he still lives in the secure facility in Edmonton, he is allowed unsupervised visits into the city. He also has access to overnight passes when he is moved into a group home, so he can basically travel anywhere. Matthew can go anywhere. He has so much freedom right now. It's almost as if he's free. He's grounded for some time. He has to stay in the facility for some time, but it's almost as if Matthew is free. The doctors made it clear that schizophrenia cannot be cured, but it can be managed. If Matthew stops taking his medications, these are doctors' words, stating that if Matthew ever stopped taking his medications, then he could relapse. And this time it would be full blown. So I don't even want to imagine how his full blown episode would be like. Killing 5 people at once or something, but a full blown episode, I don't even want to imagine how his full blown episode would be like. I watched a lot of interviews of the parents of these 5 students, and they also feel that this is not right. Giving him so much freedom, giving him a clean slate from the court is not right, because he took 5 lives and he is just getting treatment. Most of the coverage, if you see, people don't focus on these 5 people. It's like, okay, there are 5 students, there are 5 kids, 5 kids were killed, okay, so how can Matthew get better? And it's actually very sad, because when I was searching material for this, all I could find was Matthew is getting better, Matthew is looking fine, Matthew has started talking. No one's talking about the kids, no one's talking about the kids' parents, no one's talking how are they doing, no one's telling anything about them. It's all about Matthew. It breaks my heart. It kind of breaks my heart. The following year in 2019, when he had his yearly re-evaluation, they said that currently Matthew was still given heavy doses of medication, but if he stops taking his medication at any point, he could easily relapse within a couple of weeks or months. About this review, every year the parents of these victims, they have to go up to this place where Matthew is. They have to go up to the board and they have to talk to the board. They have to tell them why Matthew should not go out as a free man, or why they think that Matthew deserves to be there in this facility. So it's kind of like a punishment to the parents, because every year they have to relive that incident. Worst of all, because Matthew was found not criminally guilty, he can't be ever titled as a murderer. Who knows, in the next year, year after that, few years down the line, doctors would say that Matthew is fine and he would let go as a free man, and he's not even titled as a murderer. He could start living a good life, and if he stops taking his medication, then what? In 2021, for the first time since the murders, Matthew spoke at this re-evaluation. He said, quote, "I accept what I have done and I'm truly sorry. I hope one day I will be seen as a person who is able to earn his way back into the society. The weight of this tragedy bears heavily on my shoulders and has not lightened over time. I carry the shame and guilt with me 24/7, and forever I want to make amends in any way I can. I am committed to managing my illness." End quote. So although he spoke after a long time, he was still denied full discharge as they felt he was still a danger to the society. There was also a park that opened up in South Glenmore in remembrance of the victims. Matthew is currently 30 years old and in a mental asylum in Edmonton. He was last evaluated in 2021. If Matthew were to be released, he would be released into a group home. So from the looks of it, it seems like Matthew could be fully released in a couple of years, which is quite scary. As I said, I kind of feel like everyone's focusing on Matthew. Everyone's talking about Matthew, his good health, how can he recover, how can we just put this behind us. But at the same time, people are not putting it behind them. They are calling these families every year over and over again to come, to talk. The ultimate victims are the families. They are the ones who have to relive that night every single year, trying to figure out one way that they could keep Matthew behind bars. But unfortunately, they can't because he's a free man. I saw a lot of news reports where the families came forward, they spoke and they said that how Matthew should not be let free and how they felt like they lost their children and Matthew does not deserve freedom. No matter how what happened to him, even if it was not his fault, he did something and their children are never going to return. So ultimately, the question here is, was justice actually served? Was justice served in this case? Did the families of those five kids receive justice? According to me, no, they didn't. Justice was not served. They did not deserve this. Thank you guys. Thank you so much for being with me so far. I know this has been a very long story. I know there has been a lot of things. It took a lot of time to gather everything because videos, most of the information, everything points towards Matthew. There is very less that is said about the five. Thank you so much for being with me so far. I would love to know from you guys, what do you think? Do you think that justice was served? Do you think that Matthew got what he deserved? Do you think that the families of the five could ever, you know, get out of this? Do you think that Matthew deserved to go to prison, or do you think that it was good that he is getting the help that he needed? And one of the main questions that I had running through my head, which I want to know from you, is do you think that this could have been avoided? Do you think there were, of course, signs from the beginning? So do you think that if his family, if his friends, or if people around him would have noticed this beforehand, do you think it could all have been avoided? So thank you so much for being with me today. Till then, see you next week and stay safe out there.
That's it for the day. Thank you so much for being here. Don't forget to follow me on social media, especially Instagram. The links are in my description box. You can also find the episode show notes on my website 3amfear.com. If you love reading thrillers, you can now check out my free ebook available on my website. Once again, thank you so much for being here today and see you next week. Have a great week and stay safe out there.